Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my guest today is Peter Moskin, the son of one of my childhood heroes. You see, I grew up in Glenwood Springs, and Pete's dad, Red Moskin, was a larger-than-life character who influenced my life just by the way he moved through his. When I knew Red, he was working as a salesman at Bullock's Department Store, and I would often stop there on my way home from school just to get a Red Moskin greeting. "Good afternoon, young man," he would say with his open-faced smile. "How was your day?" He always treated me like I mattered, and sometimes 10 minutes with Red was just what I needed after a bad day at school. He's one of those memories that I take out on occasion and cherish, and I'm happy to have Pete talk about his dad and their life together. Pete starts our interview by talking about his grandparents and his father's childhood.
The story that I always heard about my grandfather was at age 14, the Austrian armies decided that he should become a member of it, and he chose not to.
He didn't want to be a soldier.
No. So he moved to, he started banging around Europe. He was, of course, in Austria. Then he went to Germany, spent some time there, apprenticed, I believe, as a bricklayer or a mason. And then he spent some time in France for a while, and I think he came to this country because of the opportunity that it afforded him. And I'm sure there were other relatives that may have come over too. He was born in 1857. He died in 1924. He came to this country and went to Pennsylvania and started working in the coal mines and doing masonry work. He came out here because there was work. The coal mines were starting to boom out here, and there was work for masons and that sort of thing. So he came out here probably the 1880s.
When he first came, he was how old, do you know?
He was about 14 when he left home, and then he must have, I suppose he was in his mid-20s. mid-20s or something when he came here.
Isn't that pretty amazing to think that kids pretty routinely were leaving home at their early teen years, you know, 14, 12, on their own?
Yeah. Well, I was just talking this morning with my first cousin, Ruth Preddy, and I asked her when her father had come over. Oh, he was 16. And my grandfather, I think, always followed the work. He liked to follow wherever they were doing masonry work. My father always told me that he was instrumental. He did a lot of the brickwork on the coke ovens. He worked there, and then he started working in the coal mines. Their first child was born in Sunlight, and this would have been 1888. My father was born in 1902 in Spring Gulch. There was Spring Gulch, Marion, and Sunlight.
And Pocahontas.
And Pocahontas was a siding somewhere in there.
So these were just smaller mining camps. I mean, Sunlight was fairly good size, and so was Marion.
And so was Spring Gulch. In the middle 70s, I took my father up there, and we looked around, and people had been digging holes where they had figured out they were just digging for artifacts. And he says, "Oh, yeah," he said, the bar was here, and our house was over there, and, you know, the mine, the front of the mine was right there. And the railroad came in, and so they were very mobile in those days because there were a number of trains that they could go from Spring Gulch to Glenwood.
Yeah, rail travel was, you know, all the way to Aspen and Carbondale and Marble.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would, I don't think they did a whole lot of it, but so my father was, his name was Arthur John Moskin. He was never known as that. He was always known as Red Moskin. Now, he was born in 1902. He was the third youngest, actually, of 10 children. 8 survived.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher. And my interview today is with Peter Moskin. Peter Moskin's dad, Red Moskin, grew up and spent the early days of his life in the Spring Gulch coal camp just outside of Carbondale. Here he talks about how they moved from Spring Gulch to Glenwood Springs down on Donegan Road.
What was your dad's stories of growing up? Did he have a hard time or was...
Oh, yeah. He was... Well, my dad had a good time.
Yeah, that's my memory of him. He was always...
He made the best of what he had. My grandmother, who I think was a very strong person, she decided... my dad told a story where my mother, or my grandmother, sort of put her foot down. My grandfather said, oh, hey, they're going to do a World's Fair or an exposition in St. Louis. And they're hiring Masons.
Yeah.
And so he said he was going to take the oldest child, which was a boy, and they were going to go lay bricks in St. Louis. And she said, no, we're not moving the family. Spring Gulch reminded her of the town of Revaux, which is west of Bolzano in what is now Italy. But it reminded her of that country, and it does. I've been there. And she said, no, we're staying here. And so they ended up buying, I think it was originally 10 acres, because they were in West Glenwood, and they bought it from Devereaux. This would have been probably around 1900, 1902.
Your dad was born in 1902, so
right.
There were lots of reasons your mother or your grandmother didn't want to move. She would have been left with all of the kids on her own, right?
Well, no, he would have moved the whole family.
Taken the whole family to St. Louis?
Yeah. And she said, no, I'm not doing that.
Do you think the plan was to work in the mines and try to accumulate enough money to then buy land?
Well, that's what happened. My grandparents saved up enough money. The CF&I paid them everything in script, and you had to buy through the company store.
Right. So they were always indentured or indebted to the store.
And as my father told me when we went to Spring Gulch, he said, oh, yeah, he said they'd put gold underneath the floorboards. So they acquired gold. They got money somewhere, and they hoarded it, I guess, or tried to save it. They saved and saved.
Scrimped.
And so my grandfather continued to work at the mine. And then he came down here on weekends when he was off. He worked on building the house. He started out with a small barn and built all the rock work and then put a wood top on it. Then he built the house.
So he built the house that stood on that property for years, the big two-story house?
Yep. It was a log house, actually, underneath all the...
Wow. So he was quite the craftsperson. I mean...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what he loved doing. He liked doing that, and he was very skilled at it. Then probably, I think they moved the family down here in around 1910.
So your dad was just a wee boy by then. He was, let's see, he was...
Yep. He was eight years...
Eight,
7, 8 years old. Well, God, they started what would be called a truck garden, I guess, a business with the family. They had apples, cherries. They grew lettuce. I remember a story about them having celery. And the basement was a dirt basement, and they brought in sand. And they, for Christmas, if you bleached the celery, white celery was considered quite a delicacy, and I think it still is.
Yes.
In Europe. And so they would bring the celery into the basement, put it in the sand, and keep it. And I don't know, they had all kinds of, you know, cherries. They raised strawberries. I think back in the days of strawberries, there were, they won the strawberry days for the biggest strawberry at one point. I heard that story.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Peter Moskin. Peter Moskin's dad, Red, grew up in the coal mine camp of Spring Gulch just outside of Carbondale, and then moved down to Glenwood Springs, where his family started a truck garden. Here he talks about his dad's adventures with his brother, Bino, in the truck gardening business.
My father's first job, which he remembered fondly, was he and his brother, who was Bino, Bino was 2 years older than my father, and they would load up the cart and the horse, and they would come to town and sell vegetables, apples, everything of that sort. They would sell over here to Poverty Gulch and the houses. They would just go up and down the street.
Where's Poverty Gulch, just for people who don't know?
Oh, Poverty Gulch is at the end of, I guess, 7th Street.
7th Street.
In that area.
Right
there.
On the river?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he used to, he said that the ladies of ill repute would come out of their houses and harass the two young kids trying to sell vegetables.
That must have been quite an adventure for Bino and Red to drive the cart down into the tenderloin of Glenwood.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they sort of enjoyed it.
Of course. No, we'll go. It's all right.
but they were, you know, my dad was very, he was probably 12, 14 at that point.
Yeah. The wonders of the world.
Yes.
The strange part of Glenwood that was always sort of kept in the shadows, unless you're going to sell produce.
Well, no, it wasn't the shadows.
Really?
As he remembered these ladies, when they went to Grand Avenue and where they went out, they were always dressed to the nines, and they were very, they did the best of the a bad situation. And I think they probably
all dressed up and, you know, presented themselves pretty.
Yeah, they wanted to be respectable like everybody else. And I mean, you've got to consider that at that point in time, I don't know whether Glenwood was 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people. So everybody really knew everybody. So, I mean, you're not going to hide the business.
I know it, you know. When your husband goes downtown for a drink, you always have to go,
But that was a different time. My grandfather, he would dress up on Saturday night. He would put on his best clothes, come into Glenwood here and play cards with the guys. And they would drink a little beer and, you know, so there was never...
down where the Springs Bar is now, right?
Yeah. I think in that area somewhere.
Right. I'm sure there are card games all over that downtown area.
Yeah.
In that day.
Well, I don't know whether they were I don't know that they were gambling a whole lot. Now, maybe they were. Probably they were.
There's probably a bet here and there.
But he would come in and, you know, the kids and the grandmother would be at home. That was
the old days.
Yeah.
Dad's going out, and you're all staying home.
Yeah. Dad did what dad wanted to do.
Within limits, right? Because your grandmother knew where the line, or your grandfather knew where the line was.
Yeah. What he said went, but I think probably what my grandmother said went even more.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Peter Moskin. Peter's dad, Red, was like so many first-generation immigrant children. He needed to stay home and help his parents make enough to make the family viable. He was bright enough, but there was no money for school after high school, so he went to work. Working as a salesman, something he was a natural at.
My father didn't marry until late in life.
How old was he when he married?
He was 36. In 1938. So he was. That's where he first. We all remember him, I think, as the master salesman, but I think his first introduction was selling vegetables to going door to door.
Of course. People's skills were learned early on the back of a wagon.
But they're genetic, too. He and my uncle were very close. My uncle died at 65. He was very conservative and very structured, I guess. He didn't adjust to change real well. My father, on the other hand, he could adjust. He would accept and sort of roll with it. He wouldn't like it. He would complain, and I think that contributed to his longevity.
What was he like with you kids?
Well,
your dad.
Oh, my dad. My dad was great. He put up with a whole lot of crap from me. He was like an entertainer, I guess, is my recollection of it.
He was, man. I used to come home on my way home from school. I'd stop in Bill Bullock's department store just to talk to your dad.
Well,
he always had time. And
yep.
He was a larger than life character. I don't know if he was, you know, part of that was that it was part of his job, but he seemed to take to it pretty well.
Well, I think it's important to know where he came from, too. I mean, his education was, as near as I can remember, he was, by the time he was sophomore in high school, he quit. He was out of high school. But he had, his eyes were not good. And in those days, they, having glasses care and...
Yeah.
And I'm not sure his hearing was very good.
Right.
Because particularly in his later years, it wasn't, as we all age. I don't think it wasn't that he didn't have the intelligence. It was he got pushed perhaps out of school, and he started working around here. This would have been, so he was 16, so this would have been 1918, maybe after World War I. Did some manual labor, I think he told me at one point, but he got into the 1920s. he worked for Napier's department store. But Napier was a, they were a very wealthy family. And so my dad started working there and started, again, using his, honing his skills as a salesman. And, but he also, I think he was a bit of a partier. Napier liked to party as well. And my dad really liked to dance. He loved dancing. And he and Napier would, this would have been during Prohibition, would make a run to Leadville to buy, apparently the illegal booze up there was pretty good. So they'd
rum leave, runners.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, sure. It was for their own consumption, I think.
Sure.
And for, I think Napier liked his alcohol. My dad, I don't know how much he drank. When I know him, he'd come home, have a beer, and that was it. My mother always said that he didn't hold his liquor well. So, and he was always the driver. He was sort of the, I think he was the designated driver for Napier and all of his friends. Driving to Leadville, leaving here maybe at 5-6 o'clock at night. Dirt roads and mud, and
you'd be crazy to be drinking out there. You'd be dead.
Well, yeah,
yeah, basically, yeah.
And they would make a run and come back and get back, and go to work the next morning.
Oh man, yeah.
He honed his skills with Napier, and I think that job didn't end particularly well. I think Napier's mother thought my father was a bad influence on
the young Napier.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Peter Moskin. Peter's talking about how his parents got together.
How did your mom and dad get together?
My mother was a nurse at the hospital. I think it was the hospital that was over the First National Bank at the time. And there was a guy called Noonan, who was an attorney, I believe. And he built the building where it's called the Mason Building now. He had a law office up there, and he had a young girl working for him, or she was around him or something. And this girl's father, he wasn't pleased that there was any contact with Noonan and this young girl. And so Noonan was coming down the stairs of that building, and this guy, the father, pulls out a shotgun and shoots Noonan. Well, they rush him to the hospital. My mother was, of course, I think, being a nurse, you're a surgical nurse as well as...
Yeah, you're everything.
You did everything, because the hospital wasn't particularly large. And so she had worked all day. They tried to save Noonan, and it didn't, it failed. I think he died. And so she was at the, at the drugstore having, she was beat, and in walks my dad. And I don't know what the rest is history. They got together, and they were shortly married, and...
What was their relationship like?
Who?
Your mom and dad. What?
Oh, my mom and dad. Well, I guess I would characterize it as being us against the world. You know, everybody says we're not gonna make it. You know, everything was, my father was a Catholic. My mother's family was not, they were, I don't know whether they were religious at all, but if they were Baptists or something of that nature. I never even heard. I don't think they were religious. My father was Catholic. My mother's father would not walk her down the aisle. It was rough in those days, in the 20s and the 30s. My dad would tell me about the Ku Klux Klan, and, you know, being Catholic and that sort of thing.
Supposedly Italian, even though...
Yeah, and that framed... those two... Well, I guess to shorten the whole thing, they both died within a month of each other. They were, I guess, inseparable. They cared for each other really well.
That was Peter Moskin. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on Immigrant Stories, go to our website, immigrantstories.net.